Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we've got our friend, the goddess of grains, the vice president of grains. It says his elevator in Michigan now, doing a little traveling for a little business. What's up, Angie Setzer?
Oh, just, you know the drill.
Right, living the dream, baby. Are we Debbie Downer today, or are we Susie Sunshine?
Well, I guess it depends. I'm in Michigan. I'm in my trade territory right now, and it's been really dry here. So we've pretty much expedited harvest by about 2 or 3 weeks here. And so I joked Tuesday on Twitter there that I'm a conductor on a train wreck right now. So that's how I feel, is we're our harvest pace is going to be really quick, really furious, and for someone like me, that really stinks, because when the grain moves fast, the basis tends to get worse, and I rely on good basis levels to trade. I rely on a more firmer basis, meaning that the cash price is closer to futures than what it's probably going to end up being once everything's said and done here as harvest progresses. And then, of course, my space. I have to manage space at an elevator. So the quicker stuff comes in, the harder it is to get it back out as quickly as you need to. But I guess on the silver lining of the cloud or something, I don't know, yields are down here in Michigan, so maybe it won't be as difficult. I don't know. You pick what that is, if that's a good or a bad thing. I'd prefer big yields and slow harvest. So this year is going to be, for us anyway, right here in Michigan, probably medium yields and fast harvest with the you know, we just got done with a string of 90 degree temperatures and absolutely no rain in a lot of places. So here we go. It's harvest time.
Is the fast harvest good or bad for farmers?
For farmer, some will tell you they enjoy it, but really a harvest pace that looks to go as fast as this one is not going to be good for farmers. But I've never seen, we're typically, you run soybeans in Michigan around 15% moisture. They're running about 8% this year. So that's not good for farmers, because the stuff that you're harvesting shrinks as it gets drier. So farmers aren't going to like that. And then I worry about their safety, because they're going to try to get this crop off as quickly as possible. And, basically what's good for farmers would be temperatures in the low 70s, you know, sunshine for about 5 days. And then two rain days, you know, some time to catch their breath and things like that. And then some 70s again and sunshine for 5 days. So yeah, I mean, the guys would prefer, I think, a dry harvest and the ability to get it off the fields quickly over a cold, wet, rainy, cruddy sort of harvest weather. But, you know, I think right now we're on there's two extremes, you know, there's the cold, wet, rainy, and then the hot and dry. They prefer, of course, the middle, but we're on the hot and dry end this year here in Michigan. I mean, Iowa, they're out of the fields for the next couple of days. They got a good amount of rain across the state here. Just before I flew back home to Michigan, it was raining. It rained Monday into Tuesday, you know. So Michigan doesn't really matter for the whole picture, but it definitely matters to me and my customers. So that's what we're dealing with right now.
Where does it matter? Where is the, who is the biggest supplier of let's say corn?
If you say corn, Iowa and I would say Iowa and Illinois tend to be the big states that everyone watches really closely, as your Iowa, Illinois. Of course, the what they call the fringe states around it, Indiana, Minnesota's really proven that they're a big corn producer here. The last few years, they've had just about perfect weather. And then, of course, you watch Nebraska, Missouri. But the hardest part is the only states that really matter when the weather is bad is Iowa and Illinois. You could say,
okay.
So when it's good, everyone says, oh, but look at Minnesota and Nebraska and Missouri and Indiana. And, and they'll list off all the good production. But when it's bad, the only states that really seem to garner attention, is Iowa and Illinois.
Now, I'm hearing talk that the bean harvest is going to be bigger than they thought. Are you hearing that?
Yeah, everyone really right now is getting really excited about these bean yields that they're seeing, and I'm not really in that camp yet. We're really just getting started with harvest in a lot of places. I mean, here in Michigan, like I said, they're peeling the crop off really quickly because it's so dry. Our yields, in the areas that got a little bit of rain, they're probably 10 bushel below average. In the areas that didn't get the rain, they're probably 15. Bushel, maybe 20 bushel below average. So you're talking in Michigan 30 bushel on the low end, and maybe some upper 50s in the areas that got rain. Now, of course, again, Michigan doesn't matter. So I'm hearing a lot of stories of 60s to 70s in Iowa, and everyone is really excited about that. But these beans that they're harvesting now that are ready to be harvested filled their pods mainly in the first half of August. And I can tell you that in Cassous County, Iowa, where I'm from, we got 8 inches of rain July 15th through August 15th. So we got a good chunk of rain around that time that the pods were filling. And so I'll be interested to see how the later run beans harvest, how the yields look there. And if we maintain that 60 to 70 bushel to the acre average in those places here over the next couple, 3 to 4 weeks, then I'll be a believer maybe that yield is slightly higher than what the current USDA estimates are. But I think based on the yields that I'm hearing right now, soybean production should be pretty comparable to what the USDA says. Maybe a touch lighter, but I think, maybe a touch heavier. It just depends. But I think the USDA number is probably in line for soybeans, just based on those early yields. But I really need to see, what we get as we work our way into the rest of the month and start to really get into harvest. Where I'm at in Iowa, and as I drove into Minnesota, because I flew out of Minneapolis, I would put soybean harvest progress at 1%. So it's difficult to say or get an idea what the yields look like versus the USDA just on the starting yields that we're seeing in my opinion.
No, I understand. I just I don't know as much about it as you do, but I do know that a couple of my guys in Kansas said that they had much more than they expected. And so I'm obviously trying to
Kansas
gauge.
Had phenomenal. Yeah, Kansas had really, and I met a group of farmers. I did a speaking engagement in St. John's, Michigan, of all places, the first part of August, and there was a group of farmers that were there. It was with a fertilizer
AgriLiquid.
So they were on. Yep, AgriLiquid. Yep, these guys from Kansas were on a tour, and they swung into AgriLiquid to do some studies or to get some feedback or whatever it was that they were there for. There's probably 15 guys there, and every customer or every farmer that was there, but one, poor guy. I felt so bad for him. Was expecting the best crop they'd had ever. They just were getting the rains, and then this poor guy said someone had built a dome over his farm because he hadn't gotten any rain.
Hold that thought. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. We're with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, traveling in Michigan, but always makes time for the Bubba Show. And this is the Bubba Show, Liberty Talk. .fm. You can download the show every single day. And of course, if you want to get my daily updates, all you have to do is email me at bubba@bubbatrading.com, and I'll send you a 4 to 5 minute clip every day after the close of the equity markets. We'll be back right after the break with more from our friend Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back. Welcome back to the The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And Angie, so we were talking about the guy with the dome over his farm. And of course, that's obviously a problem. And of course, you know, one of the things is always interesting about the business. And I kind of want to talk about the business end of this. But, you know, some guys will get a huge yield, right? And the prices are high. And because a lot of guys are getting small yields, which obviously force prices up. How often does that happen, and who really benefits when that happens? I mean, I know the guy who's got the goods obviously benefits because he's getting much higher prices, but give us a little bit of the business end of the farming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where an old farmer told me when I first started, and it's so true. He's like, this is the only industry where you pray someone else has a disaster. And, you know, and use the word pray, you know, relatively speaking, because I don't think there's really any farmers on their knees begging for, you know, a guy in Iowa to have a drought. Well, maybe they are. I don't know. But no, it's very much that way where, of course, if there's a widespread production issue, the market will move higher. And every farmer personally wants to strive for the best yields he possibly can have. So he's hoping that, you know, prices will be high and that his yields will be high and he'll be able to benefit, you know, doubly. And that's, there are farmers that in 2012, you know, managed to have reasonable rainfall and were able to sell their an above average crop at a well above average prices and benefit, you know, completely. And then in the meantime, you know, you have other farmers that are relying upon, you know, crop insurance, hoping that it'll help keep them whole because their yields are down so much and they don't have much in the way of bushels to sell. You know, and this year right now, like I said, it's for a lot of my customers in the area, it's going to be a rough year for them, in the sense that their yields are going to be down, from normal. Like last year, you know, here in Michigan, we had a really good crop. A lot of guys had 10 to 15 bushel to the acre, corn above average. They had 20 bushel above average soybeans. I mean, we had a phenomenal, phenomenal soybean crop. Like I can go on forever at how well soybeans yielded last year, you know, especially versus this year. Well, this year, you know, so when you have high yields, when you produce more bushels to the acre, you have more bushels to sell, and that can help offset the low prices. So that you have a certain group of customers out there, and I've seen the conversation on Twitter, that'll say, you know, they're good with 330 cash corn as long as they can have 200 bushels the acre yields, you know, and it's really rough when you have 330 cash corn and 150 bushel to the acre yield or less. And so that's what some guys will deal with. We'll have, you know, low prices and low yields because not enough people were impacted by the reduced production. And you know, all they can hope for is you know, some sort of indemnity check from crop insurance, which many times doesn't necessarily help, or hope that the small amount of production that they do have that they did produce, they have locked in at higher values than current levels, you know, which this year has been rough for a lot of farmers because it really never gave them an opportunity to sell it, corn, at least, at what, you know, you would call a no-brainer level. And that's, you know, for most farmers, 450. For some reason, they're married to that 440, 450 idea. You know, maybe even 425. We didn't even get up that high off the December on futures. So a lot of guys this year are going into harvest with, you know, the potential of a reduced crop, at least from the last couple of years, and reduced contracting or reduced forward sales too. So it's a little ugly. I mean, it could get a little ugly out there, and I have some real concerns that you're going to start to see a lot more in the way of guys saying, "To heck with this noise, I'm out." You know, I've heard stories. I've got a friend that's a seed dealer in Ohio, excuse me, and she has two customers that have told her that after this harvest they're retiring. I have a customer in particular that, and I'm not sure, I haven't had a chance to really talk to him about it, but he texted me and told me the same. After this harvest, he's he's done. He's going to go back and go back into the job market. He's got a engineering degree and he's very smart, and he worked for GM prior, and so he just, this farming thing, he said it's not for him. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that. Of course, we've had a string of really unfortunate circumstances in Michigan where we've had guys take their lives. We've had two in particular that were really large, well-known farmers in the area that did at the end of last year. So I really, you know, in my position, I'm really working to try and make sure that my customers and anyone that I talk to or anyone that listens to me and or follows me on Twitter or anything like that, if that's the avenue they're looking at, that they reach out to someone, because there's nothing, there's no amount of debt, you know what I mean, that could really necessitate that option. And so that's a real concern. And there's been articles, the Des Moines Register put one out not long ago about the increase in farmers taking their lives. And it was a real issue in the 80s. And I don't mean to work over into the dark side, but it is something that, you know, right now with some of these lower production levels and these high levels of debt that these guys have accrued, you know, over the last couple of years, or the last decade, you know, because there was a string in 2012-13 where they were told that the price of corn would never go below five again, you know, and so we're really kind of working our way into what could be a rough situation for some folks. And but then on the flip side, you have some folks that, you know, have reduced costs and been smart and contracted ahead, you know, been aggressive on that side, they'll be just fine. They'll be the ones that'll be at the auctions that a lot of folks are going to be having. And then, of course, here in Michigan, we have that 500-pound elephant in the room with the guy that owes a local input supplier $150 million. So that's going to be a real real shakeup here in Michigan agriculture as well. And unfortunately, it's not going to be the last big farming operation, I think, to really kind of hit the skids here in the nation.
Well, I mean, it's first of all, farming is not for everybody. It's a very tough business. You know, it's first of all, it's a lot of work, right? It's a lot of work. It's, you know, it ain't 9 to 5, right?
No, you know, not even close.
It's not 5 days a week. You know, you don't get benefits. You got to go out and earn them. And of course, you know, I think a lot of the problems have to do with the Federal Reserve. I can always tie the Fed into anything, but of course, the drawdown on money and the ability to get money, and then the banks putting pressure on the farmers, and of course, a lot of times forcing liquidation, especially when prices are pretty shaky, you get these banks, you know, stepping on these guys, and of course it creates an enormous amount of pressure, and you know, of course we all get affected mentally when we're getting beat over the head by somebody, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I was talking with my parents about it last night because they were asking, and I had just actually talked to a friend of one of the farmers who had taken his life, and they were planning the auction, and they said, well, why? You know, what would drive you to do that? And I said, well, when you feel you have no other escape, and that's what, you know, that is a really hard problem for some of these guys, and even just the ones that are going to decide they have to just get out. You know, I spoke to a group of bankers here a month ago, and had two guys come up to me afterwards, and they said, you know, we rewrote the terms of this loan for this gentleman a year ago, and told him he had a year to pay it off, and he needed X amount of dollars for his corn in order to be able to do so, and to remain whole, and blah blah blah, and he needed $4 corn, cash corn. And you see where futures are right now. He didn't get it. He didn't get the $4 cash corn, and now it's 50 cents less than on, you know, think about that on 250,000 bushel of production. He's 50 cents below where he needs to be. That's just futures, not even, I don't know what his cash price looks like in his area. So obviously he's not going to be able to pay this loan off that is due, I believe they said November 1st. And so the bankers are asking me, what should we do?
Hold on. Hold that thought. Right. We'll talk about bankers because that's one of my favorite topics. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of Grain Citizens Elevator, talking to us from the road in Michigan. And, of course, this is the Bubba Show, LibertyTalk.fm. You can download the Bubba Show every single day and the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And don't forget to sign up for my new daily update every day. I send it out right after the market close, a little 3 to 5 minute video. You go to, you can email me at bubba at bubbatrading.com. We're going to stop out here for a break. We'll be back with more from Angie, the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba at thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba at thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains on Twitter, and of course, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, we're talking a little bit about banks before we went to the break, and of course, this bank's going to hit the clamp down on this guy. And I don't know that the bank really wants to clamp down or if they can work out some terms, but a lot of the problem is driven from up above, because I'm assuming this is probably a smaller community bank, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a smaller community bank, and you know, everyone has to, when they work in a job, they have to do things they don't like. And you could tell these guys were visibly shaken at the thought that they were going to have to, you know, basically tell this farmer, he was going to have to give up land, pay less for rent, you know, something in that nature. He just was not going to be able to pencil out what he needed to pencil out to continue to farm, at least to the extent that he had been farming. But of course, you know, I said, well, what about another rewrite of the terms or a further extension? And yeah, exactly what you're saying. I mean, they have been told no. Under no uncertain circumstances are they able to, you know, basically rewrite those terms or extend this line of credit. This guy's going to have to basically seek someone else to step in and take over when it comes to his debt and pay off their portion of the investment. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, and it's easy for people who don't have to look into the eyes of these guys and say, you know, no, we're not going to give you any more. And I can understand, you know, we've been in that situation in my business because we extend credit for input, you know, and we have been in the situation where guys have unfortunately gotten, you know, too deep and, you know, and then of course there's the occasion where you get the guy that you've invested or loaned money to that takes and decides to pay everyone off, but the person that they owe money to first and foremost. So, I mean, we've seen all sides of it, but yeah, I mean, the banks right now, there was a real, real push. You know, I had lunch with, there were two or three different small commercial banks in the area, you know, around about 2013. That came to me and asked, how do we get into ag lending? We want to lend in agriculture. You know, how do we get started in that? Can we have a meeting? Can you come speak to a meeting and bring your farmers and blah, blah, blah? And now you have banks that are trying to run. It's not there again. It's right back to where we were in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, where you know, these farmers are scraping to get by. And the biggest problem that you have right now that most guys will tell you is their health insurance cost has gone up 400% from the last time we had $3 corn. You know, the cost of living has not stopped going up exponentially for these farmers. and they're trying to figure out how they can afford to have, you know, a family and provide for their family when prices are low and banks are getting out of the lending business and they can't afford to buy coverage for health insurance or, you know, buy that new vehicle or something like that. It seems like, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, the talk of inflation and things like that and the cost of living. And you're much smarter than that. I'm just an old elevator gal. But, you know, everyone talks, oh, no, it's, you know, inflationary pressure is minimal, blah, blah, blah. Well, try living, you know, just look at your expenses that have increased over the past 5 years, how things have changed. And you know, these guys are trying to figure out a way to make a living on prices that were difficult to make a living on, you know, 10 years ago when just your general expenses were down considerably from where they are now.
I understand that. And that's, I mean, look at listen, I've always said that it's a joke that they talk about inflation because you buy a computer, you buy a new refrigerator, whatever you buy, you know, in big ticket, it is cheaper or the same. But the things that you use every day, your fuel, gee, I think the farmers need fuel on the farm. I don't think so, right? Fuel costs, insurance costs, you know, things that you have to buy are much more expensive.
Your pickup, your combines. I mean, you could buy to go out and buy a new piece of farm machinery anymore. You've got to spend $250,000, you know, and your health insurance, just going to the dentist, you know, your big ticket items are a lot cheaper. I can go buy a TV at Walmart now, a smart TV that was $1,500 5 years ago. That's $700. Woohoo! That smart TV, you know, God, I hope I don't get sick. But at least I have a smart TV. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hilarious to me, the disconnect that we have right now. And I think a lot of it comes back to people work for, companies that provide them with a lot of those things, perhaps, that they don't see the actual real cost. But I can tell you, as a someone who manages one of those companies that provides, you know, health insurance or any of those other additional benefits that everyone's come to expect if they go to work, it's a substantial. It's, I mean, it's cut into our ability to make a profit significantly as well. It's just a huge, you know, it's the 500-pound elephant in the room, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend I have the solution to it all, but it's definitely been something that's impacted rural America as a whole.
Well, of course it has, and there is a solution to it, but we don't want to have the solution. The first solution is to let insurance companies go across state lines and let them compete.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that would be the first thing to do. The second thing is to get the government out of it and leave us alone. And have real interest. I mean, you know, how many people does this elevator have working for them?
The elevator, 52.
52. Oh, well, they're right over the
board. We are just above.
You better fire. You better fire three. So you don't have to have Obamacare. Fire three.
Right. We we spent so many years with my boss refusing to. We were at 49. And that was the max employee level he wanted to be. Well, after a while, if you continue to grow, you have to add another couple people. And so, yeah, we're at 52 right now, and it just kills my boss. I mean, he's happy that we grow, but he would much prefer to be below 50, because then you're a little bit less regulated, you could say, than what we are now. But yeah, we have 52 people.
Well, you're not subject to the Obamacare restriction. I mean, that again, that's the whole thing is that is the biggest problem in America today. And finally, Janet Yellen came out yesterday and said, hey, we don't know what's going on, basically. I mean, you know, she said, I'm clueless. Right. I'll put it my way. I'm clueless. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And I go, well, we knew that all the time. I mean, why is it taking you this long to figure it out that you had no idea what you were doing? And what I mean by that is, you know, one thing you and I know for sure, I mean, you're a new mom, right? I mean, you can't
hear him chatting in the background.
Yeah,
yep.
but you can't read about everything you need to do for that baby in a book. You can't read about everything you need to do for your customers in a book. There's a lot of stuff you go by trial and error. You got to be able to make a mistake, but know how to correct it when you do. And that's where the Fed felt that they could strictly run everything from a textbook, which again, it did great for if you were rich, man, you got a lot richer. But if you were you know, a farmer in middle America, you got hammered. And so did the prices of your goods because of what they did. And I think that's a much bigger problem. I think that has a lot of effect on farmers as well, don't you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest problem that we have in America today is we have a whole bunch of people that have read theories on how things should work instead of actually being involved in learning how they actually work. I mean, that's it's really easy to sit around in a classroom and think that, you know, better than the people actually living out there. I mean, just ask any 21-year-old kid. They know more about life than anyone who's actually lived it. I mean, I'm not too far removed from the days of my 20s when I knew everything and it was really awesome, you know, and so that's our problem right now is that we just got done with a whole boatload of leadership and we still have a bit of that, but not near as much. You know, we actually have people who have run businesses, worked in on the business side of things and seen how that works, that are in power now. But we just got off an administration and I'm not saying anything negative about the president or anything like that. I'm simply stating a fact. The majority of the people that were in power for the past 8 years were exceptionally well educated, and you know, and then had worked for a lot of nonprofits or something of that nature. You know, where it wasn't true business, having to run, having to run a business or having to work in the economic setup that they had put together. And yeah, to say that we have no clue, well, I can point to a lot of decisions that have been made that would have caused a lot of the issues that we've been invented, you know, and just because we haven't seen runaway inflation when it comes to our food and those other things, doesn't mean that it's not there, you know? And so that's, what's funny to me is that people act like, we should just be happy because you can go and buy a cheap TV and, you know, the cost of your burger hasn't really gone up, you know, but meantime, to live, you know, anywhere else or to do anything else, you know, your cost has increased substantially. And there are a lot of people that are having to make really tough decisions about what they're going to do in order to properly care for their kids as they go forward.
No, listen, prices have gone up. I go to the restaurant. I can't go to the restaurant anymore. I'm too cheap. I can't take it. I look at those prices. I want to jump off a building. I mean, it's amazing on how far we've gone up. And the nice thing is that, you know, sometimes they go up on commodity prices, but when the commodity prices come back down, they never come back down in price. But we're with Angie Setzer. We'll get you after the break. We're with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, on the road, but making time for the Bubba Show. And in the meantime, you can go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And don't forget about the daily update, Bubba's daily update, available to you. All you have to do is email me at bubba@bubbatrading.com. I'll send it out to you every day. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Orr. We'll be right back with Andy. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, you were, as I cut you off, we were talking about food costs, and I said they're ridiculous. I mean, you know, other than McDonald's and the dollar menu and a couple of the other deals, I mean, you know, you go to a restaurant, you know, a $12 hamburger, whatever it is. I mean, I don't know. I'm either way out of my time or I've lost my mind. One of the two, which either one's possible.
No, it's so true. And it's, you know, the cost has gone up significantly. And I was just reading an article the other day about bacon, you know, and right now how everyone, you know, bacon's the sexy restaurant item is what the article, I think how the article stated it, which kind of made me chuckle. But of course, bacon's sexy. It's delicious. But the farmer, the amount of money that the farmers receive. So the cost of bacon has gone up, you know, exponentially, or at least the wholesale price has gone up pretty significantly from where we've been. And, you know, there's talk that the supply is down and blah, blah, blah. But what's the funniest thing about that is that, you know, everyone else is paying a whole bunch more for bacon, but the farmer share had gone down significantly from a year ago. So, you know, everyone else is making more money on this good, you know, and just ask a cattle feeder what he's getting out of it. You know, the packer margins have been phenomenal for the last few months here, and the price in the store definitely has not gone down. But you know better than anyone out there, or as well as anyone, you know that the price of live, you know, fat cattle has dropped, you know, significantly from where it was trading here just 6 months ago. But you know, you see the price of fats dropped to 105, but for some reason my ribeye steak is still $8 or whatever a pound at the local Hy-Vee, you know, and which honestly I couldn't tell you what it is at the store because I'm one of those people. It's like gas to me. I have to have it, so I don't really ever check price, unfortunately. Right. But you know, it's one of those things where the price at the store has not dropped. If anything, it's gone up. The price at the restaurant's gone up significantly. You know, the price for that the middleman has received has gone up significantly, but the price that the farmer's getting is even less. You know, it's amazing to me. In 2012, you know, you had the Restaurant Association and you had the Grocers of America, I believe it was, and all of these people coming out talking about how ethanol was why your local grocery bill had gone up significantly. You know, no one pointed to the fact that packaging costs had increased, that fuel costs were through the roof, or anything like that. It was because we were using corn for ethanol, which, of course, anyone that was in the industry at the time knew how stupid that statement was, because the corn that we grow in the fields is never anything that people are going to eat unless they ingest it through high fructose corn syrup or something of that nature. You know, but so you had this conversation about how why our grocery prices were high was because corn was $6 or $7 and wheat was $7 or $8 and blah, blah, blah. Well, our prices at the grocery store haven't dropped one bit, but the price of corn has dropped over, you know, over
50%.
It's been halved. Yeah. And wheat's down to $4 and soybeans are down $7 a bushel and this, that, and the other thing, you know, not to mention the fact that hogs had dropped significantly here this recently and cattle prices were down. You know, your costs have never gone down at the grocery store. It's just the middleman that's been able to figure out a way to make more money. And meanwhile, the farmer continues to farm and do what he loves at the very least, but he's trying to figure out how to survive on a heck of a lot less money.
No, listen, I you know, I laugh because I've done a number of, you know, anytime something goes crazy, they'll call me, you know, do a TV spot, and I go, really? This is, you want to talk about this? You know, the biggest example, there's two big examples I give you, and one was cotton, you know, and this is a while ago, not now, but a while ago, cotton was going crazy, and they go, well, what's it going to do to the cost of blue jeans? I said, well, considering that about 1% of the cost of blue jeans is in the cotton, I don't think it should do anything to it. Of course, they'll figure out a way to raise the prices, but I think the biggest offender here is Starbucks, okay? You know, coffee, when it's expensive, they raise and they never come down. You know, at least at a gas station, they screw you just a little bit. You know, they'll go up five and they'll come back three. Okay. At least they come back a little bit. Starbucks, they just keep going up and they keep, you know, blaming on the high cost. So where's the high cost? Well, coffee's half of what it was. So now, and I'm still paying $5.95 for a latte. I mean, are you kidding me? Are we going to really live by that? And that's the problem, is that the prices go up, but they never come down, and that's where these profit margins come in for these big stores, you know, and they can keep complaining about everything, but yet, you know, they squeeze the farmer, they squeeze the packer, they squeeze everybody, and in the meantime, they just squeeze out all the profit, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's so hard for me because I see from the business side of things where it's like, God, when the price of doing business goes up, you know, you've got to spend a year or two, you know, trying to make up margin. You know, for instance, we have a non-GMO food grade soybean program. So we produce, it's a closed system. We produce the seed, you know, we get the farmers to plant it. The farmers plant it. We give the farmer a premium to do so above the local market. Then we take the beans in, we clean them, we bag them, we ship them to our foreign customers, or some are even here in the U.S., you know, the soy milk people or something like that, that like the non-GMO bean. But we had a really big turn in the market. The market got oversupplied. You know, when we first started, you had a really solid sell value. You could sell to the foreign buyers at a really good number, and we could provide a really good premium or bonus to our farmers. And So then all of a sudden the market got oversupplied. So we had a significant amount of beans that we had purchased at a higher level, and the sale market just kind of disappeared. And so we had to take a hit on those higher, you know, the beans that we paid a higher price for, et cetera, et cetera. So over the next couple of years, then, as the market has tried to improve, we've tried to cover, you know, those losses that we had a couple of years ago by, you know, keeping premiums maybe a little bit limited and hopefully be able to sell at a better value. I understand that side of it to a certain extent where you want to try to make up some of that lost margin. But there comes a point in time where you cross over from making up lost margin to just plain being, you know, greedy or pocketing some money. But it's so true at this point, you know, in the grocery store or anything like that, people wouldn't know what to do if we saw the prices drop down. If it was a true 1-to-1 ratio on commodity prices versus the price in the grocery store, the consumers would not know what to do, with the low prices. I mean, we already in the U.S. have the lowest food costs out of our income, you know, of any country in the world. But if we were to really take it down to a true value versus where commodities are actually trading right now, you take it from a 10% of disposable income to probably 5 or less at this point if we really were trading or selling food based on the cost of the wholesale purchase of the commodity. I mean, because it's just commodities as a whole are down so much, you know, at least agricultural commodities are, that it's amazing to me.
Well, and it's only going to get worse because all these farms we talked about earlier that are going to end up closing, they're all only going to be gobbled up by big corporations that run farms, and they're going to make it even harder for us to get what we need and get better pricing. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, the biggest loser in this whole entire deal right now is probably going to be the American farmer, because it's just like with the guy I was talking about earlier that has $150 million in debt that we know of. At least the rumor is it's far greater than that. But I was talking to a customer of mine yesterday that he's out of the trucking business. He said he had a truck and a set of trailers and they, you know, they were trying to figure out a way to make money for him. And he said, to hell with it. Sold the truck and the trailers, and he said, I had to do it before this whole big new amount of equipment's going to hit the marketplace, because there's going to be a bunch of used equipment, because the people that are going to, you know, if he ends up declaring bankruptcy or whatever it is, these people need to get paid. So These folks that are going to take over this equipment are going to put it on the marketplace. So it's even going to get worse for the farmer, at least in my local neck of the woods, because you're going to see this huge increase in land availability and equipment availability and supply.
All right, we got time availability. This is Angie Setcher, the guy at Grains, Vice President of Grains. This is Oliver. Angie, as always, great having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I always love coming on.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.